Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Yes. Episode 152.
Yes, it is, Jared. I can feel the excitement. I can feel it. You want to talk about a meaty bone? You walk into a steakhouse, Jared, this is us going, hey, give me the tomahawk. I want the big boy. Oh, it's going to be meaty.
Yeah, there's some news to discuss at this hour, Tuesday, 8:15 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Going down. It is going down. MLB is on fire right now. They're passing out contracts, Jared. They're passing out suspensions. And then the big boys, the big suits are coming into town and telling folks, appreciate you. Thank you for your service. Folks are out of baseball as of tonight. As of tonight, Jared, here's a tasty little J. Hay nug that I'm sure he had all balled up, ready to throw on the sheet and toss into the oven. As of right now, Dave Martinez is the only manager of the last two World Series, last three World Series, to still be managing his team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a tough look for baseball. Where do you want to start?
Let's get into it.
Let's start in 2017. Let's start with the Houston Astros. Maybe not in 2017, Jared, but as we found out yesterday, the Houston Astros had initially suspended general manager Jeff Luhnow as well as their on-field manager, A.J. Hinch. Initially suspended for 1 year.
Unprecedented.
Unprecedented. The organization fined $5 million as well.
Which is the maxes that's allowed.
Correct. Max is allowed.
I know that some people were like, that's barely even a slap on the wrist to billionaire owners, but that's the most that you can fine a baseball team.
And trust me, we'll get into all of that. But along with the $5 million fine, as Jared just pointed out, the max fine allowed to be levied, they were also banged their first and second round picks, not only for 2020, but 2021 as well. So that is ultimately four draft picks, two first-round picks, two second-round picks, $5 million fine, both manager and general manager initially suspended by Major League Baseball after the conclusion of the investigation of the Houston Astros. Now, not now, but a little while ago, Mr. Crane, the owner.
Who's absolutely skating, by the way.
The jefe. Well, look. Is he? Is he skating?
Yeah,
because we have to start to figure out where we draw the line because that's what's happening.
You can't fire an owner, but the league's reports just being like taking him at his word that he didn't know about it and like, oh, okay, moving on. Like that's basically what the report says. Like everyone else, they can say they didn't know about it. Like A.J. Hinch.
Jared, that is information, and I'm gonna be completely honest, dude. That is information that is probably made sure to not reach that level. Like, look, if we're gonna do this, if this is gonna be a thing, there's a certain level that this shit can absolutely not get to. Because if it does, we're all fucked. To your point, because you can't fire that dude, the man or woman who may be writing the checks, can't fire them. But what they can do is look at each one of us down through either nostril of theirs and say, I didn't know. And that's just not how we roll. Thanks for coming out. And that's sure.
But don't you think that there's, I mean, I'm not saying that Jim Crane knew about this, but I'm not saying he didn't know either, because essentially they're just taking him at his word, which I don't know. I'm not asking for a huge like witch hunt.
At what point is that okay, though? At what point are we allowed to just take somebody at their word, or is everybody open to that prosecution? You know, like, is Jim Crane open to like what are we doing? Do we need to seize Jim Crane's hard drive? Do we need to check his emails? Do we need to get his text messages? Like between the communication between him and Alex Cora, because in my mind, that's how that information would be floated. Is Jim Crane and Alex Cora are chopping it up at a community event? Damn, AC, you've got these boys fucking raking. I knew it was a great idea to bring you into the mix. I knew you'd have a great impact on these young stars, but holy shit, man. what's the magic secret? What's the recipe? And he's like, oh, man, just a lot of hard work early and often. You know what I'm saying? Just a professional approach. That's how we do. AC's not going, yo, Jimmy, let's go grab a fucking Johnny Walker, and I got something to talk to you about. You ever heard about a little closed circuit television? That's not what happened. That is not what happened.
I don't think that that's what happened either. But if you're doing this for multiple years and in the postseason, and there's a lot of people that you're paying their salaries to that know about this, it's not like, you know, it's not like it's like one person who knows or three, like a small circle. The entire team knew. And then if the entire team knows, then it's like, think about it this way. What about, like, you know, if you're a player and you're a young guy, I'm not naming anyone, whatever. If you're a young guy on that team, and maybe you're telling your friends about it, and your friends tell people, like, stuff gets around.
Jared,
like,
Jared, let me there ask is you a, this. Let me ask you
hold
this.
On. There's a 0% chance that knowledge of what the Houston Astros were doing was contained to just the players and the people responsible for putting the scheme together.
Well, that's a different statement than Jim Crane having any knowledge.
Let me give you this example.
How many, and you and I both know the answer to this. How many podcasts, how many Starting Nine podcasts has the chief and creator of content, one Dave Portnoy, listened to?
None.
Okay, so stop right there.
But
so that is exactly how privy Jim Crane is to what's going on in the trenches, in the dugout, in the clubhouse. He is so many fucking layers removed from what those boys are doing in those walls. It's not even funny. Like I said, Jared, those conversations are kept and formed in a way to keep him on the outside so that if shit should come to a head like this, they are not falling on the axe like they are. And the players are thanking their lucky fucking stars that they are not in the crosshairs right now, and that Hinch and Lunau fell on the sword and ultimately had to kiss their sweet ass goodbye, because Crane ain't having that shit. And that's why I feel, as you have seen through all of these interviews with AJ Hinch, who is an intellectual man, understands, forward-thinking, he is a bright dude. So as a lot of people took for him to be sort of, you know, smug and arrogant in his responses, because now you circle back and it's like he knew then, which is why he was talking that way and responding that way. So there's just no way that they are going to have Mr. Crane on the in, because there's no way Mr. Crane knew about this and then decides, you know what, fuck it, I'll fire him now. That's not a thing.
Here's my counter to that. And I'm not saying that I know for sure that Jim Crane knew. I'm just applying logic here, and your comparison to like Dave not listening to the podcast or whatever, like what we talk about on the show is not juicy info to Dave Portnoy. So if the players are having like these, there's monitors, there's cameras that they have, and they're doing like the electronic band-aids and all that.
Your team winning the World Series as the owner is fucking pertinent information, and how they're doing it.
I know.
You're curious about that, which is why those players and those staff members, knowing what they know and knowing what they were doing, are like, yo, homeboy, he can't know this. He cannot know this.
Right. But I'm not saying that any players or coaches or anyone involved directly went to Jim Crane and told him about it. What I'm saying is that younger players, coaches, guys who are no longer on the payroll anymore, those people leave the organizations. Think about, you know, like how much information within baseball circles gets spread over pillow talk. There's people outside the organization that definitely knew about this. And then people talk because it is juicy information. So there's reason to believe, and I'm not saying that he knew, but there's reason to believe that that information got around. Because, I mean, I'm sure, like, there are players coming forward that are posting to, like, Logan Morrison posted on Instagram. He's like, yeah, we fucking knew about that. Like lots of guys knew about it. Like, Trevor Bauer never played for the Astros. These guys knew that something was going on. So I just find it hard to believe that there's no way that even rumors of this happening didn't make it back to Jim Crane.
It's almost like Jim Crane being the individual who, like, you know, like soap opera. Everybody knows that this dude's getting cheated on. Everybody knows this dude's wife is an absolute just hose bag, except him. And then he finally finds out, and everybody's been talking about it. Everybody, and but when he comes around, right, those conversations die down. We don't talk about that. We keep that to a minimum because here he is, and we can't let that out. He can't know that. And now he's like, well, I had no idea. Well, God damn it, this get her out of here. Like that would be, and that's kind of his reaction. I had no idea. See you fucking later.
Jay Hay, the conscience of starting nine. Gun to your head. Did Jim Crane know about this before the investigation?
I don't think Jim Crane knew. No.
I'll say this. I believe, seriously, man, think about the way that thing with Stephanie Epstein, the Sports Illustrated reporter, was bungled, right? With Taubman.
Taubman.
Right. When he was running his mouth about the whole Osuna thing. And think about at a low level, Jared. And when I say low level, because that's a term that organization themselves has used and applied to people that they feel are just, you know, replaceable. At a lower level, meaning not a Jim Crane level, folks made an effort to sort of distort and twist and hide, run away from, ignore the fucking truth. Like this lady makes her living writing words and factual based accounts of what goes on. And an entire organization at a lower level, again, at a level lower than Jim Crane, said, no, I don't think it happened that way. And it was like a collective effort, right? And that is what we have seen, is a collective effort up into a certain level for this organization to conspire. And that moment in time absolutely had an impact on Jim Crane's decision-making now. Why? Because when that Taubman flag got ran all the way up the Jim Crane pole, what happened? He got out.
Yeah.
Now what happened with Luhnow? He got out. As soon as he gets all the way up to that crane pole, you ain't fucking surviving that guillotine, pal. Yeah. Nip.
So I guess what I kind of want to get into is did the punishments fit the crime? So you're losing first and second round draft picks for 2020 and 2021, the $5 million fine, the 1 year suspensions for AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, all of this unprecedented, by the way.
Let's put those draft picks into financial context, because to your point that you made earlier, which is a great point, Jared, $5 million max penalty, but Jay Hay, slot money wise, first round pick, what's that guy getting? Between what, like 3-8, something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I mean, so you have to assume, well, you don't have to assume in the 2020 draft, they're picking, I don't know the exact pick, but they're picking very near the back end of the first round.
Right.
And that you would assume that would be the case again in 2021 as well. So while I think these are you're probably looking at something in the high ones, I think, at that point in the draft.
Yeah, like so.
Like 1.8 million, 1.5 million, something like that.
So now you're being told that you don't get to spend somewhere in between when you consider the two first and second round picks each year. What does that come out to be? Somewhere around 5 million in the 5 to $8 million range that they're now like forced to not spend. So this is a team that has made quite a bit of money since their 2017 run, I think it's fair to say, and maybe even a little before that. And 5 million, no big deal. That's in his fucking ashtray. And now he doesn't have to pick. And I think there were some interesting numbers. What's 51% or maybe just north of that of first round picks make it to the big leagues. Obviously a smaller number than that of the second round picks make it, and so on and so forth. So again, we know this about baseball. It's not like that first round pick is impacting your organization tomorrow. That guy very well may never sniff the league and may very well never impact your team. So again, Astros fancying themselves a team that can take another team's trash and turn it into their treasure. Are they really impacted? Sure, everybody wants a first and second round pick. Everybody does. But is it the end all to be all for this organization specifically when you think about the recency of their financial situation and their ability to cultivate diamonds out of coal mines?
Sure. I don't know, man. There's another layer to this with the Jeff Passan story that I think came out today, Tuesday, where there was a conference call with Rob Manfred and the owners of all the teams saying, you know, you are not actually the craziest fucking part about all this. If the Passan story is, you know, in line with what actually happened, because he did say that they implied, they didn't say it like directly. There was a conference call with Rob Manfred and the owners of all the teams, and that they were told not to comment about the punishment that the Astros received, and that the punishment for commenting would be worse than what the Astros got, which is fucking crazy.
So the other 29 teams were on a conference call and were basically given a fucking hush. Like they were told, zip it. Can't say nothing. And if you correct. Do, whatever comes out, yours is going to be worse than that.
Here's the direct thing from Jeff Pass and ESPN. Multiple ownership level sources told ESPN that dissatisfaction with the penalties had emerged following a conference call with Manfred, in which he explained how the Astros would be disciplined, then told teams to keep their thoughts to themselves. Quote, "The impression," one person familiar with the call told ESPN, "was that the penalty for complaining would be more than Houston got."
That's... You know what? That takes some balls. That takes some absolute stones when you think about the ownership being the group that puts Manfred to bed at night. You know what I mean? That's who put this man in power, is this group of individuals. So Manfred has really, look, and we know how I feel about Uncle Rob, okay? I've got some issues with Uncle Rob. But he really is in a sticky situation. He's on a slippery slope here. Because he's got to bang the Astros, and he's already, I mean, the heat is clearly on the Boston Red Sox and Alex Cora. We're going to get to that departure a little later, but the heat is on. The heat is on. He has to please the owners. He has to serve the fans. He has to serve the game.
So let's circle back to the main question. Was the punishment enough? Because it would seem as though other teams feel like they were not punished enough, whereas my initial reaction was, I mean, but the other thing too, the holy shit part of all this was Jim Crane firing AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, who were suspended for 1 year. So like the holy shit part wasn't even mandated by the league.
And that's why I do, like, I understand you playing the devil's advocate and providing a different angle than the one I'm providing, which is kind of, you know, I'm coming from the clubhouse and I'm telling you that there's no way we're letting that old motherfucker know, because if he knows, then I'm out of here and I can't have that shit. Nay, nay. So think about that. That's how shocking that is, man, because that's his boy, right? Crane and Hinch, that's his fucking guy. Luhnow, that's his guy. Though,
about wanting to keep it, you know, like certain people not wanting to find out the way that I looked at it with the AJ Hinch part of the report and how he was like, yeah, I was against it and I broke monitors to prevent it from happening. There's no way. Once Rob Manfred said that players would not be disciplined for this, which I believe was in 2017, like if there were any electronics sign stealing methods that were going to continue after 2017, that players would not be disciplined for this because there was no way to know like who was using it, who benefited from it, whatever. It was going to fall on the field manager and the general manager. So if you're AJ Hinch and you know that this is happening and you broke a couple monitors to try and stop it from happening, that's clearly not enough because it was happening. There's no way that if you're in the dugout, right, and you're hearing the fucking trash can bangs or whatever, you know that it's still happening and it's your ass that's on the line. So don't tell me that, like, you know, yeah, you try to stop it. There's no way that he went far enough in his effort to try to stop it, knowing that you can fucking hear the trash can and you know what they're doing with it.
And that's what, Jared, I don't want to use that quite as a segue to get into Alex, but when you think about Alex's place in all of this, the man's name who has been mentioned 11 times in these investigative reports, to a point, you're right. AJ's probably turning a blind eye or a blind ear, if you will. He's going Helen Keller, right? I don't see shit. I can't hear shit. I have no fucking idea what is going on. That's the game that AJ Hinch was playing. And the reason that people are thinking
still
that
no benefit to him.
Oh, no. You're that is a benefit to him, is because he's going to win those ball games, Jared, and he's going to get
he's
going to
win the games, but he still doesn't have, like, even if you have plausible deniability that you didn't know about it, that you didn't see it, that you didn't hear it, Rob Manfred already said, guess what? It falls on you.
Sure, but I don't know if you're following me, but I am agreeing with you here that there is something to AJ Hinch talking about kicking monitors, talking about doing everything he could at one point in time, which eventually wasn't enough, which he acknowledged. So the whole idea of trying to create distance from what happened, but also claim accountability to some level, that's exactly what this statement was about, which was, yes, show of hands, who was in charge? AJ, put your hand up. Show of hands, who did it directly? And AJ's like, hey, I did not run the wires, okay? And I didn't buy the TVs. I didn't set it up, all right? I knew what was going on, and I even went and broke those TVs a couple times. That's how pissed off I was about it. Okay, so AJ, what did you do ultimately about it? And then that answer is nothing.
Just let it happen.
I let it continue. And that's what he can't write out in words, right? Because then there's no reason to even write that pretty little paragraph. So you can't say that much. So you let that roll. And that becomes his way, again, of distancing himself, yet trying to claim some sort of accountability, trying to maintain a level of integrity, because that man is trying to get a job in baseball next year. Remember, and that's something to keep in mind. It's not like he just can't go to the yard, right? He can't go to any yard. He can't go to any facility. You can't go watch a baseball game in the year 2020. You can't go. Mm-hmm. You can't go.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I couldn't even begin to imagine what that would feel like.
Yeah. And you know, it's, From his standpoint, from AJ Hinch's standpoint, penalty's harsh. You just lost your job, and even if you wanted to work in 2020, you can't. But from an Astros standpoint, do we feel like the league did enough? Because the international spending, untouched. Draft picks, first round, second round. Like, I heard there were some people being like, oh, big deal, they're just draft picks and, you know, they're lottery tickets. Who knows if they're going to hit on them? I mean, losing two first round, two second round draft picks back to back years, that can set an organization back quite a bit, especially when you consider, look at all the players that they have coming up on free agency. Like, they're going to have to replenish that at some point. And while they have spent when they've needed to, like Justin Verlander, they spent on him. Well, guess what? There's a lot of players that are coming up pretty soon. They're not going to be able to pay all of them. What do you do?
You throw in the qualifying offer and you take those comp picks when they sign elsewhere, unless obviously the performances would be something that would kind of put you behind the eight ball with them accepting.
I wonder how they would respond to that loophole though. Right. Cause I wonder how the league would look at that as a loophole.
That's just business, baby. That's not a loophole. That's just business.
It is a loophole. Cause then they could draft in the first round when you got your picks taken away.
That's right. But each team is granted a pick, like unconditionally each year. Like, you get a pick in the first round, you get Oprah's handing out first round picks to fucking everybody. Okay. But when you start fucking up, well, people start taking away Oprah's picks. But if you in house, just with your resources, have the ability to generate income, if you will, that's what the Astros should be thinking about doing. And hopefully the players that would be in question or in line for free agency far outperform any notion of accepting a qualifying offer. That would be the best case scenario for the Houston Astros, so they could conceivably cover the two draft picks that they're going to lose early on with qualifying offer returns on the sandwich pick tip. That would be beautiful for the Houston Astros, because you're not only getting that productivity on the field, you're also going to be gaining the return via watching those free agents who just brought you another successful run at a hopefully division title for them and beyond. Well, they're going to walk away and bring you the opportunity to secure those talents that you've missed out on because you can't get your shit together.
To put some specifics to what the approximation is, the Astros are going to lose just over half their draft pool for 2020. So it was going to be something like 6'8", 6'9", according to Jonathan Mayo of MLB.com, and they would lose something like $3.5 million of that. So it impacted their ability not only to add elite talent there, but also to get people, you know, spend more, add people that, you know, kind of fall in the draft as the bonus pool works out.
And remember, in a league where we don't have a salary cap, that's what all of these sort of these buckets of money are essentially designed to do is to be able to launder your way around the idea of a luxury tax and shit like that. Like, where are you okay with taking a hit? Where are you okay with spending? And at the end of the day, if it all balances out for you and you feel like you're just kind of in the same position, maybe, you know, a little bit of a black eye, you probably got two black eyes right now, a little bit of a bloody nose too. You know, you're probably, I don't want to say okay with it, but hey,
yep,
maybe not as bad as it could have been. So the long answer is no, the league didn't do enough. No, the league didn't do enough, because I've said it before and I'll say it again. Now, you know, right? The baseline punishment is a year long punishment or a year long suspension for your general manager and for your on-field manager, should there be evidence tying them to cheating scandalously. No players.
Has already been set. You, not only do you get banned for a year, you're going to get fired. Like, there's not an organization that's going to be like, all right, we'll take a year.
We don't know about that yet, because what happened with the Red Sox doesn't let us find that out.
I totally disagree. I think the while you can say that MLB only went as far as to suspend them for the 2020 season, I think there has to be an implicit understanding that this was discussed at least somewhat ahead of time between MLB and Jim Crane, I think, and he was allowed to fire them during that press conference. Like, I think to me, there has to have been some sort of understanding, and that the total viewpoint of this is that those guys lost their jobs. Like, that's the baseline now. It's not just a suspension. It's losing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And there's no way that if somebody pulls something like this in the future, that they would keep their job. And I think they would receive a lifetime.
And that's why I said what I said about we don't know that yet. And it's because, like, think about it, boys. Typically, we're only given one example. Typically, we're only given one shot to look at how this is going to go down. Well, we had, on the same fucking day, we had two opportunities. Conceivably, we almost had two opportunities to see how two independent organizations would handle this. And we watched it play out with the Astros. So that's where you have your baseline set. You then watch Alex Cora and the Red Sox mutually agree to part ways. Okay? There was no suspension levied. There was no firing. There was a mutual agreement to part ways. So while we would all love to believe that integrity rues the day and each team would do exactly what Mr. Crane did, we just don't know that. And I'd love to believe it. But I'd love to believe that we weren't setting up fucking cameras and running closed circuit TVs into the dugout and banging on trash cans to give our players signs. I'd love to believe a lot of shit.
So, Dallas, let me ask you this. Do you think if the Astros had not fired AJ Hinch and Jeff Luhnow, that the Red Sox would not have fired Alex Cora? Because I still think Alex Cora gets fired or whatever, the mutual agreement. I still think that happens, because, I mean, if the rumblings are true, like, we're hearing lifetime ban. We don't know if it's going to be a lifetime ban, but we do know that AJ Hinch got a year, and we do know that Alex Cora's punishment will be more severe than AJ Hinch's. So would you hold on to a manager that you know is probably looking at 2 to maybe 3, like, best case scenario is being banned for 2 to 3 years? You're going to keep that guy?
We have to go into why Alex is in a little bit different position than AJ Hinch, because that matters. That matters. And why he's in a little bit of a different spot than AJ Hinch is because he has been named multiple times. He's been named the most times out of anybody in this investigation thus far. And along every turn, around every corner, he has been the primary dude, go-to.
So, and can I counter to that? Let me counter.
Well, hold on. So from there, he was a bench coach who knew what he should not have been doing, had his manager kicked to monitors of his and been told to stop it, and he still continued to the point where he brought that same idea, not idea as in run some TVs here, and blah, but the same approach to circumventing the rules to Boston and applied it there as well. So in the league's eyes, this is somebody who has said, bro, I don't know what. No, stop signs are not. Those are just suggestions. I'm not stopping. There's nobody stopping at the other. I'm rolling right through. And that's how the league is looking at what AC has done. That's the difference between AJ Hinch and Alex Cora. Is Alex Cora executed with AJ and then moved on and executed on his own as well. So it's easy for the league to look at Alex and go, you know what? If there's a common denominator here, for us, it's pretty obvious. And the Astros did what they did and supposedly stopped it. And now they're wearing it. Well, why didn't the Red Sox stop it? Oh, well, here's why they didn't stop it, is because here's this guy, Alex Cora, again. And I'm just saying that's how the league is looking at this.
So
that's the difference.
2 points here. First point is that it really, I mean, I'm not denying that Alex Cora was the guy that orchestrated the whole sign stealing scheme. However, there was a story. It was after, like, because Cora was being basically pinned as the Red Sox manager while the Astros were still in the World Series. So he was gone while still with the Astros. There was a story, apparently there was like a beef or something, or there was some sort of like incident, some sort of altercation with Cora and AJ Hinch or whatever it was. I have to go back and look at that story to get all the facts, all the details, but there was something that happened. So it would suggest to me that beyond beating the Astros in 2018, that Alex Cora's exit did not appear to be smooth, did not appear to be all right, best of luck. So when the reports come out, and the Astros are being investigated, the Astros employees that are still there, they are still like, everyone's just like, yeah, it was Alex Cora. When Jeff Luhnow released a statement to say after he was fired, he couldn't even refer to Alex Cora by name. He referred to him as, quote, the bench coach. So it would seem to me that there are still sour grapes between the Astros and Alex Cora. That's point number one.
Well, let's point go back number to two. Well, let me ask you this, Jared. Okay. Have you ever thought as to why AJ Hinch and Alex Cora may have come to fisticuffs or had a little bit of a disagreement, if you are now of the knowledge that AJ Hinch and Alex Cora at least twice had incidents that led to AJ Hinch kicking monitors set up in AJ Hinch's dugout by Alex Cora? So
it could have been about
me,
that. We don't know, but it could be. It's plausible.
If you don't, you've said that you are not denying that Alex Cora is the ringleader. So if we're not denying that, then let's just, for conversation's sake, put him in that position. Mm-hmm. That's who AJ Hinch would have the problem with. So if at the end of the day, we're questioning why Alex Cora and AJ Hinch may have ever had a reason to have a disagreement, today we found out there's two pretty good reasons why. And the third would just be the persistence of that behavior. And so when it's all said and done and shit's boiling over and we're clapping hands and I ain't got to see this motherfucker anymore, we're going to have some words. Mom, we're going to air this laundry out. And that's what happened.
So it felt to me, while Alex Cora might have been the number one guy, that the people who were being investigated that still work for the Astros were like, nope, it was Cora. It was all him. So the one guy, and I don't want to switch away from Cora. We can still talk about that, but I do want to bring up this point. There is one person who is absolutely skating on this whole thing on a technicality. Carlos Beltran, the manager of the Mets, who was,
don't hate the player. Don't hate the player, Jared. Hate the game. Don't hate the player.
Because he was a player, he was protected. All players, there was no discipline for players. So when he's investigated by the league, he's like, I can say whatever I want because I know I'm not getting in trouble for this. However, that doesn't mean that the Mets won't. That would be crazy if the Mets now follow suit and fire Carlos Beltran before he manages a single game, which I'm not going to say is going to happen. But would you be surprised if that happened?
Yes, I would absolutely be surprised if Carlos Beltran did not move on and continue to be the manager. That would shock the fuck out of me. Here's the level of hypocrisy that is Major League Baseball. You ready for this? guys that got caught cheating that used to play this game that are no longer playing that are called coaches and managers. Yeah, you guys are going to get in trouble for that. No more coaching and managing for you. What about the guys that are playing? What about the guys that did all the, you know, the guys that took the swings and what about those? Nothing. Well, what happens when those guys want to manage later in their career? Will they then be denied the opportunity to do so because they are these players of offense? They are these players that lacked the integrity during this
time? I think it's different.
But since they were players, but that's like, think about that, man. I'm not talking about Alex Bregman finishing out another 10 years in his career and doing work and then deciding to stick around and manage a team and not being allowed to. I'm talking about Carlos Beltran, balls deep in the middle of this 2 years ago, 3 years ago, as a player, and is now going to manage a Major League Baseball team. And the only difference in terms of level of knowledge, level of execution of this cheating scandal, the only fucking difference between him and AJ Hinch and Alex Cora was that Carlos Beltran was eligible to take a fucking at-bat.
Correct.
That is the only difference, people.
Correct.
And AJ Hinch has been suspended. Alex Cora has mutually agreed to part ways. Jeff Luhnow suspended. Luhnow and Hinch eventually dismissed and relieved of their duties. Mm-hmm. And the only difference between all of those men and Beltran was a switch hitter. Like I said, eligible to go play defense for you and take an AB in the seventh if you needed to.
So then now we need to look at it this way. The Astros only fired AJ Hinch because he was getting suspended for a year and they didn't want to bring in a guy for a year and then go back to Hinch. Because, like, if you look at it that way with Beltran, it's like, okay, we just hired a guy, so integrity doesn't matter. Like, we would have kept AJ Hinch, but we're going to fire him because it's like, well, we're not going to bring in a guy for a year and then go back to him. So if integrity doesn't matter, then the Mets will just, all right, well, whatever, we'll just keep him. But if you're looking at Alex Cora, AJ Hinch, and Carlos Beltran as equal culprits, which is fair, how do the Mets not fire Carlos Beltran? Because it's like, all right, well, we're bringing in a guy that is admitting that he was part of this. He cheated. He was a big key cog in it.
So now let me explain something here that now I'm going to put on the old school hat. And now I'm going to take up for these guys, okay? What Alex Cora has the innate ability to do, what Carlos Beltran has the innate ability to do, is something that is a skill that is polished and honed and fine-tuned over a long period of time with a lot of experience. To know what to look for in terms of a pitcher's setup, his glove position, things like that. To know what to look for in a catcher, in his position, knee up, knee down, hand position, is he anticipating a throw, sign sequencing. All of these things are things that are learned and passed down through generations of baseball IQ. Where we're at now is the intersection of being able to apply all of these skills and all of these approaches that have been cultivated in our game for generations. We can now put that in an Excel spreadsheet. We can now apply that in real time with the technology. So instead of me leaning over the rail and looking at the pitcher and then looking at you, Jared, right before he throws the pitch and me going, curveball, and then he throws that curveball, we've taken it to the next level. And the players are always concerned with winning, always concerned with taking every advantage given to them. And at times you're like, yo, if the boys that are wearing the suits are coming down here into the clubhouse and putting these ideas out here in front of us, and this is not a, we're not being told no, I don't know, you know? And so lines can be blurred for guys. Lines could be gray. Ultimately, I think we all understand when and where those lines exist. And that's what we're dealing with right now is it was obvious what shouldn't have been going on. It was caught. And the hammer's been laid down.
Okay. So then let me ask both of you, if the only difference between Beltran, Cora, and Hinch is that Beltran was a player, why should he keep his job?
That is strictly a technicality answer. Like if the answer is, well, Jared, no players are going to be punished. No players are going to be held accountable. That is all I have to tell you, my friend. I plead the fifth. I can say that all goddamn day. And that is the response is he's a player, man. Well, yeah, well, he was a player, brother. Yeah, well, I didn't like the fact that he was a player, man. He wasn't the manager, but he was still on. He was a player, dude. He wasn't the coach. Yeah, but he was still a part of it. He had the brother. He was a player. He didn't sign anybody's paycheck. He wasn't making any decisions. He was one of 25. He was a fucking player. Yeah, well, I don't like that. Yeah, neither do I, man. Doesn't make any sense at all. But guess what? He was a player. And that's the difference.
Yeah. So that's basically it. The Astros get punished. Alex Cora and the Red Sox have agreed to part ways. AJ Hinch fired. Jeff Luhnow fired. And we still have the 2018 Red Sox investigation, which genuinely I am looking forward to that investigation because I do know some of the details in the Athletic story to be false. And I have a good feeling that, I mean, it's easily fact checkable that some of the, when I blogged the Alex Cora dismissal, one of the things that I pondered was if Alex Cora, in some alternate universe, if Alex Cora just never ended up in Houston and the Red Sox hire him as the manager and he was never involved in anything with this Astro scandal, do the Red Sox stand by their manager over this, you know, video room story by the Athletic? I genuinely believe that even after whatever the investigation's findings may be, I believe that Alex Cora would still be the manager. Like, this was a, you know, we can't, I mean, he, like you said, Dallas, he was named 11 times. He's the main culprit in the Houston Astros sign stealing scheme. So the Red Sox in good faith and good conscience could not move forward with AC as their manager, probably also understanding what the penalties were going to be. We talked about, you know, you're not going to have a manager come in for a year or two and then be like, all right, we'll bring in the old one back. It just can't happen. So their hands were tied. Cora's out. But yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to, it's a lot to digest.
You know what I think about too? I think about, are the players, Who's going to be the ones to say who? Are we going to be okay with the suspensions and the ultimate dismissals being the end of this? Because other teams, other teams are going to get looked into, right? And now we're going to, like, because there's still the word in front of Alex Cora's name in these investigations, right? Allegedly, like, hasn't been proven, quote unquote, because you haven't gotten those quotes from the players to say. So what I'm saying is, are we going to hear a player? Are we going to hear someone say it was person X? Is a player going to say Alex Cora said we should do this? Who is going to be dropping names? Are names going to be dropped? That is the, because as points have been made, and we all know this, think about the pitching staff of that team. You've got Justin Verlander, an active Hall of Famer. An active Hall of Famer who has been extremely vocal about performance-enhancing drug use and cheaters and all of the like. And
domestic violence.
All of it. And he has essentially stood idly by and allowed this to transpire. And sit him down, put a microphone in his face, and ask him that question. What's his response? You know, like,
I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear his response.
Wouldn't hate to hear from Brian McCann on playing the game the right way right about now.
I bet he's got some takes.
And these are legit questions. Like, look, dude, as a former player, straight up, if this shit was going down in my clubhouse and I had no idea about it, and then this came out, I'd be like, yo, what? I want to know what the fuck happened. Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me in on this. The A's were stealing signs with Polaroid cameras from the 1960s.
Fuck, I feel like the A's were giving away my signs. Fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's that. I mean, there's still the 2018 Red Sox investigation to go, but for now the book is closed on the 2017 Astros. But one last point is that I feel like because the Astros, prideful organization, the Red Sox, prideful organization, there is kind of parallels to some of the cheating scandals that have gone on in the NFL, where it's like, well, fuck, you outed us for doing this, and everyone's doing it. Dude, fuck everybody. We're just gonna tell on everyone. There are teams, I believe, that are going to get ratted out. Like this is not over. This chapter of baseball history with sign stealing schemes will not end with the Red Sox and Astros as the only teams implicated. I guarantee you.
I have an idea. The Astros and the Red Sox should have to play each other 162 days in a row, no days off. You're only allowed to travel via bus, and you play each game in the other city every day. So you go from Houston to Boston and play, and then get in the bus and drive to Houston and play, and then get in the bus and drive back to Boston and play. And AJ Hinch and Alex Cora have to drive the buses, and they have to do the laundry.
You guys see the Yankees minor league affiliate that in like September has a free trash can giveaway against the Astros.
Which is ironic because they also use the video room illegally. I mean, it's come on, look at yourself.
Well, irony's dead. Shame is dead in 2020. Don't expect anything like that anymore.
Yeah. But Dallas, to your idea, the Red Sox and Astros playing each other 162 straight days, that would imply that the Red Sox did the same thing as the Astros, which is false. And make no mistake about it, Alex Cora is no longer the Red Sox manager because of what he did with the Astros. This doesn't even have to do with the 2018 stuff, because I got some people being like, a lot of the details in there, fucking bullshit. It'll come to light after the investigation. So, like I said, if the 2018 Red Sox sign stealing thing was an isolated story and this Astros thing never happens, Alex Cora is still managing the Red Sox. He was fired today because of the Astros scandal.
Yeah, much like what happened with Stephanie Epstein, kind of, I don't want to say forced Crane's hand, but had a strong part in swinging the guillotine, leveling the guillotine, if you will, the way this did. Same thing for AC.
Yeah. It's a rough night for me. I'm going to need some Trulies, Dallas.
You got to get T squared up, bro. I'm telling you right now, I'm hammering one. I told Jay before we got going, Jay, this is a T squared potty. And he looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? I was like, bro, T squared. Truly Tito's combo. There really is nothing like it on the planet. I'm three deep just during this potty because it's been a good one. And you should too. Folks, if you don't have it in you to go T squared, at least take my advice and get the Trulies. Just truly, just a bare, a naked truly. Get that in you. It's good for your figure. We all know this. 100 calories, 5% alcohol. So you got the punch right along with only 1 gram of sugar. So you got that perfect amount of alcohol, calories low. And if you get crazy and throw in the Tito's, hey, again, citrus packs, they're growing on me, Jared. I'm actually hammering a lemon T squared as we speak. But the berry pack is my go-to, folks. That's wild berry, blueberry, raspberry, and the black cherries. The tropical pack, not bad. My grandma, huge fan of the mangoes. You guys know this. My wife, big fan of the pineapples. Passion fruit, I'm getting there on it. Watermelon kiwi, delectable as well. I think what you need to understand about Truly is it doesn't have to go down in the middle of summer. We're balls deep in winter right now. I was pounding Trulies at the winter meetings. There is seriously nothing better than a nice, crisp Truly on a brisk winter morning. Did I say morning? Yeah, I said morning. I don't have anything to do. It's the off season, bitches. Don't be jealous. Telling you right now, Jared, get it truly in you. Get the T squared in you. Tell me all about it. 100 calories, folks, and the 5% alcohol that you're looking for in every other beer option that isn't dazzling your spuds, dazzling your buds. like the Trulies are. Truly hard seltzer, folks. Get it in your life.
Love that. Love a good Truly. Literally right after the Alex Cora news, our boy gets breaded up. I didn't even tweet about it. I was like, how could I possibly put this on my timeline when I'm getting absolutely massacred? I didn't want it to seem like I was deflecting, being like, hey, JD, congrats, brother.
a little self-awareness for the Rocket there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take my punishment. I'll take my beating on the internet. That's fine.
That wouldn't be the your time. Mentions. Oh.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time. Certainly not going to be the last time. But it was a nice little, don't cry, here's a tissue type situation where it's like, oh, wow, Josh Donaldson got paid $92 million, 4-year deal, Minnesota Twins. I think it's a great fit. I think you now have a team that just hits absolute bombs. And then it's like, hey, how do we take a step forward after leading the world in homers? Well, we signed the Bringer of Rain to a 4-year deal. Well, that's how you take that step forward. You also have it's a great clubhouse guy where we've talked about the AL Central and the landscape. And, we will get to that. We got like a Twitter question about the White Sox and why we don't give them enough love. I'm going to combat that big time. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck out of here.
I basically just picked that as an opportunity for us to say that that's not true.
Yeah. But let me catch you at the cell and get open. Just get open handed for talking that nonsense.
My brother bought opening day tickets, White Sox Royals today.
That.
He and his fiance.
Yeah. I mean, I treated the White Sox. Like, I don't know if it was his last podcast or the podcast. It was when they signed Dallas Keuchel. No, the White Sox get love. But anyways, Minnesota Twins. They signed Josh Donaldson. I think it's an excellent fit. I think,
Can we talk about that lineup?
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about the Miguel Sano contract later. I mean, we can loop that in here, where they have put a lineup together that should genuinely strike fear in your hearts. Like, that is
truly
the lineup.
Nine deep.
Fuck around.
Like, yeah, actually is, nine deep.
Yes, it is the definition of a lengthy lineup. Who's at the top of that? The fucking, the Mad German?
Yeah,
Mad Max?
So, probably.
Mad Max, maybe what, Polanco, Buxton? Now they keep Buxton probably down towards the bottom.
I mean, Buxton is clearly the worst pure offensive player on this list, and right. he's a gold glove. No, I'm not making defender. Fun of you. He's a gold glove caliber defender, and he's got like some stick. Like their worst player is his baseline is like a 2 WAR player.
So think about, my God, think about a potential 3-4-5, the boomstick, the Bringer of Rain, and fucking Sano.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're looking at, yeah. Sano in there.
Rosario?
Max Kepler, Rosario. That's that lineup slaps.
Who else? Where's old fucking Marwin? Where's old Marwin?
Mitch,
your super
Mitch Garver.
Utility. Yeah, Mitch Garver.
Mitch Garver had a 995 OPS last year.
Yeah, that's tasty. Yeah.
Luis Arias.
Yeah, Arias.
Who happened to hit, like, what was it, 334. 334 in 366 plate appearances. Steamer, the projection system.
Has him
as the batting champion.
Are you serious?
Oh.
Yep. They have him like, those projection systems are naturally conservative, but I believe they have him at like 313 or 316, the highest batting average in the league upcoming season, and like 570 something plate appearances.
I mean, he raked last. What did you say? What he hit last year?
334. With more walks than strikeouts, by the way.
What was his OBP? His OBP was like damn near 400 too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 399.
Oh shit! Damn.
They've got some big time on base guys on this team.
He had like a 10% walk rate and a strikeout rate lower than that.
They've got a decent fucking baseball.
That's pretty.
They've got a decent baseball.
Age 22 rookie.
And they brought it. They brought in the old Wiley vet Homer too. Old Homer getting ready to dish out some philosophies to folks. I'm in on that.
I mean,
the Twins, folks. The AL Central.
You got Listen, we were talking about how like the Twins won what they won last year and how you had to build some level of regression into that for this upcoming season. I mean, this is exactly the sort of signing that like, well, I'm saying there was nothing about that team that was actually like, you don't repeat as a 100 win team very often is my point.
Right.
Yep. And if you win 102, I'm not diminishing what they did. I'm saying if you win 101, 102 games, you have to expect the next season that you may only win 94 or 95, right? Or 93 or 97 or whatever it is. But this is exactly the sort of move and the only move remaining on the market that like eats into so much of that expected regression, right? Because not only is Josh Donaldson an elite player, he was a 5-win player last year. By Fangraphs, he was a top 20 position player, okay? He was about it. He was equal in value to Pete Alonso, according to Fangraphs, to give you an idea. Not only are you adding a player of that caliber, but you're basically shifting a guy who's universally considered to be a well below average defensive third baseman, and you're moving him across the diamond or into the DH slot, and you're saying, hey, only worry about hitting, right? So there's almost like it doesn't quite work this way, but it's almost like a double impact, right? So you're adding a great player and you're shifting around your defensive alignment so that it is even more optimal than it was previously, while not losing any of the offensive value. In fact, gaining.
Is Sano, I'd have to go back and look at his numbers. Is he a guy that performs better in a true DH role, or is he a guy that performs better when he's in the field? Because I feel like
this is going to be a little bit skewed, though, too, right? Because he had his best full season this past year, right? So, like, I think whatever happened this past year, I think is probably going to skew the results a little bit. Let's see. This is tough to say because 383 of his like 400 plate appearances or 420 plate appearances came as a third baseman. So like basically right. All of his,
we don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't really know. Like he did really well as a first baseman, but he got 31 plate appearances there.
Yeah.
And he didn't do great as a DH, but it was 23 plate appearances. So it's, you know, 5-6 games.
I'm just always curious about that because that is such a big deal for guys trying to figure out who they are. And it's almost like an acceptance of a mortality of sorts. Like I've got to bury the position player in me and just continue to grow this pure hitter.
For sure. But I do think at least maybe that's the ultimate destination for him. But at least this season with Nelson Cruz in the fold, Sano's going to be playing first base.
Sano was built like 17 brick shit houses, not one. And I mean, he's not getting any smaller with age. So yeah, mobility on either corner of the infield is going to be limited. So his worth as a defensive player is also going to be limited. Ultimately, his home is going to be in the batter's box 3 to 4 times a game. And that's that.
And
I was going to ask, I mean, if you're a Twins fan, say the Twins are done, which presumably they could be. Did they do enough? Because I think what they were lacking was they needed a starter, they end up with Homer Bailey and Rich Hill, who's not going to be able to pitch until June. Did they do enough on the pitching side of things to be a legitimate? I mean, we know that they can get to the postseason. No one's doubting that. But I think it was Jehe that called them one of the most fraudulent 100-win teams of all time. Did they do enough? Yeah, did they do enough to actually be a threat in October?
We're gonna have to see what the young guys do on the mound, right? Smeltzer. We're gonna have to see what he does a full season. Homer Bailey. I mean, he's not gonna be the like. Are you asking? And again, you have to think about that division, right? This is a division that for the most part we feel like, I mean, could really. The White Sox on paper look really good. They look really good. And we know what the Indians look like now after an offseason that has seen a key. You know, we don't have to really get into that, Jay. Sorry I brought that up. But I have to believe you think you're the favorite if you're the Minnesota Twins. There's no reason to not think you're the favorite.
Yeah, for sure.
None at all. None for at all. Sure. Because you almost, in your mind, you're thinking you got a little better. You got a little better.
You did get a little better.
I think this has to be considered a win for them.
No doubt.
It's definitely a win.
Yeah, even though they didn't add the frontline pitching, like I get the exact composition of the team maybe isn't exactly how you want it, but this offense could be devastatingly good. They at least have a pitcher who has the potential to take that step forward in Berrios, and who knows what they're able to. I mean, they still have a farm system they could still add over the course of the season. I think if you told Twins fans that they're not going to add the frontline starters, but they are going to add Josh Donaldson, I think they would have signed up for it.
Yeah, you're okay. You're definitely okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, Josh Donaldson, but that's kind of like the mindset is you already know that your offense is a strength. Of course, your offense can get better. But I don't know. I think in that division,
you're signing up to make your best defense the best offense.
Yeah.
And it kind of looks like that's what the Minnesota Twins have done here. Oh, our defense is just scoring way more runs than you're going to.
Yeah. Which sucks. I mean, it's, I don't know. I have a soft spot for the Twins. I want them to do well. I feel like they missed the boat on Keuchel. I feel like that was a solid fit. Not that, like, you know, anyone is like, oh shit, Keuchel game one, game two start in a playoff series, but it would have been better than Homer Bailey. Shout out to the Oakland A's. You know what is exciting about this whole ordeal here is that I get to design a new Josh Donaldson shirt, which is, you know, the one that I made for the Braves. Very great shirt, did really well. Which, you know, before we move on to whatever we were just going to do, the Atlanta Braves, come on. I mean, how do you not have the capital to bring back Josh Donaldson? I know a lot of Braves fans were like, bring this guy back. Like, what are you doing? I mean, when we were talking about 100, 110, 115, 92, you didn't have 93? You didn't have 94, 95? Like, come on. If you're the Atlanta Braves, you should look at yourselves and be like, okay, the first year we were early. This year we were exactly where we were supposed to be and had a pretty much – they should have been in the NLCS. That's how you take a step forward. How do you get there and not pony up? Even if you have to pay a little extra, knowing that you got Acuna and Albies for a fucking steal. Like, well, that's you have it. Here's the money to pay Donaldson. Go fucking pay that guy.
But that's the thought, Jared, is they have that money, and we all know they have that money because we all know, or a lot of people feel, like it was a complete and total lopsided victory for the organization signing Acuna and Albies. Okay, so you're right. That money to sign a Donaldson, to sign a four-year deal, $90+ million, they do have that. But in their mind, do they have that to give to a guy who has had an injury history, who isn't getting any younger, and who will not be able to be hidden in a DH spot? Do they have that money for that guy?
That's a very, very fair point by you, Dallas.
And that's the only question, really. And I think that's where the Braves are coming from, because there's no denying what this dude means to a team and to a lineup when he's healthy. And for the Braves, if your window is now or in the future, you don't want to be strapped to and saddled and bogged down with a guy and money that you can't move and that you would eventually, hopefully not, for our boy's sake, have to just bite the bullet on and just have to wear at the end of the contract because he's, for whatever reason, unhealthy or unproductive. And I think that's ultimately been the deciding factor for the Bravos in this.
Yeah. The weather is getting colder and winter is officially here. From the perfect game day outfit to the only sweatshirt you'll want to wear this winter, the Barstool Sports Store has your winter gear covered. Go to store.barstoolsports.com to shop now. That doesn't mean you have to buy winter gear. I mean, you can buy some Starting Nine merch if you want to. That'd be pretty dope if you did that. Support the show.
Probably do that. Get some t-shirts. Get ready to rock for spring training.
We need a fuck ton more merch in 2020. I feel like there are a lot of teams, fan bases out there that felt underrepresented in 2019. We just got to be better.
Well, this is what we're going to have to do. All right.
Help us help you. Tweet us what merch you want. I mean, like, I make shirts for the players that I like. So that you got the Josh Donaldson shirt. You got the Garrett Cole shirt. You got the Vladdy Wagon shirt. There's a lot of shirts that we made for teams that are in some random ass markets. But if there's a shirt that you want to see made, let us know. We'll make it.
Absolutely. You just got to say the word, folks. Yeah. Say the word.
Yeah. Like Thanos. Snap that finger. We'll get that fucking shirt made. Jay, hey!
What up?
Oh, by the way, we were going to play a little pepper right there. Can we talk about the draft real quick?
What draft?
We absolutely can.
You don't have to worry, Jared. You don't have to
worry. We can spend as much time on it as you'd like.
But Jared, you're like 5'6", 150 pounds. You're not going anywhere to fight anybody. You don't have to worry about the draft.
275. Anyway,
hey, you don't have to worry about the draft either, you fucking hippie. Neither one of you are going. What draft
is great.
Our last episode, we did the starting nine all-decade draft.
I don't remember.
All-decade draft.
All-decade draft. It was great. So there was a clear-cut winner, statistically. And then we kicked it over to the grounds crew who, anytime we do a grounds crew, by the way, I don't even want to name the grounds crew in this because I have a theory. Mm. I have a theory. Hear me out on this theory. The grounds crew, the listeners of the Starting Nine podcast are some of the smartest, brightest baseball fans out there.
I thought that too.
They really nailed it.
Hold on. Here's my theory. Twitter.com, a bunch of idiots. So when we share polls, this is going out to people that don't listen to Starting Nine. So there's a lot of dumb people out there that don't listen to the podcast, that want to share their opinions that no one cares about. The grounds crew gets it right. However, the Starting Nine polls, whenever we are determining a champion or a winner of something, will forever now be known as the Angel Hernandez Award. Because they always get the call wrong.
It will not be known as that. It will be known as Mr. 46%. Yeah. Holy shit. I mean, it was like one of those horse races where the winner is so fast out of the gate that it's like, what are we even looking at?
Like, you know, what are you talking about? Go back to the draft. What's the other draft we just did earlier this year?
Dallas. You got 20% of the vote. This was so much more extreme. This was so much more extreme than the all-time draft results.
Was it?
It most definitely was.
How many total votes were there?
5,227.
Okay. So it's also known as the Angel Hernandez Award, not only because they got the call wrong. It was also a makeup call.
I got twice. It may have been.
Jay Hay won the all-decade draft because he should have won the all-time draft.
Not even close.
I got more than twice as many votes as Dallas in this draft. That is insanity.
It's because I was the only man of integrity that wanted to throw those teams out there with no names attached. And
clearly we know why, because your name has some sort of stink attached to it. You entertain a city full of people on a regular basis during the baseball season, and I'm just a woe little Twitter stat boy.
No, you're running all your algorithms over there at the MLB.com.
46% for Justin, 34% for Jared, 20% for Dallas. You got to love it. I mean, I think Jared has hit on a little bit of something that has some truth to it. I do think there was some makeup going on here. I think I probably had the best team this time around, but this margin it makes me blush.
Speaking of margins, I'm glad you brought up the word. There was my team had 100 WAR better than Jay Hay's, and I think 70 WAR better than Dallas's. So statistically, the best team in the all-decade draft really wasn't even close. So congrats
That's what we do from here on out. Like if that's what we got to do, like we can't do these drafts anymore because I feel like we're all intelligent enough to just go, all right, let me just like, I could honestly do that draft 2 minutes before we record. Let me just take everybody with the leading WAR at their position.
But that didn't put the results in a championship for Jared.
No, that's being argued as a winning point, though. And that's my point, is that isn't the winning point.
Unfortunately, the only winning point is the poll result. And everything else is just kind of noise and kind of excuses. Jared's WAR may have been the highest. That may be true.
I mean,
his team maybe.
Can you use the word substantially? Can you use the word substantially, please?
I do know, but what I do know is that mine was voted the best, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
Fortunately,
I would prefer if you use the word substantially to accurately sort of portray how much better my team was than everyone else's.
You had your team accumulated noticeably more war over the decade than the other teams. Unfortunately, it was.
I mean, both of you would rather have either one of my closers than either than your closer.
My team doesn't need closers because we win every game by 40 runs.
You have absolutely secured the best players at the least important position of everybody we drafted. I know. You definitely did that.
Yeah, for a guy that sprinted into the closer market. With my team,
it just shook the whole draft. I turned that draft on its fucking head.
Draft that was.
Yeah, I don't know. I just I honestly would have rather finished last than to finish second with the clearly the best team.
And again, folks didn't understand the whole decade thing, you know, like there's a lot of problems with that. I'm officially, can you guys look into the camera right now, please? I need both your eyes. You see what I just did? That's a P. I just drew a protest. That's a P.
Okay.
Just draft.
I don't give a shit. Oh. I won. You lost.
Oh, hey,
playing Pepper, baby. I hope you're ready. The Rays acquired Jose Martinez. Actually, let's just go with Sano really fast. Since we were already talking about him, the Twins and Sano agreed to a 3-year extension. I believe it said it could be worth up to $30 million. Couple nugs on Sano. He somehow managed to hit 34 homers and only 439 plate appearances last year. He had the second highest average exit velocity behind only Aaron Judge. And he was sixth in barrels per plate appearance.
Oh.
So, I mean, when he hits the ball and he hits the ball hard.
Speaking of barrels per plate appearance, Dallas Braden in the California Strong softball celebrity game got one AB and put it into the seats, and during batting practice, probably got 10 swings and 6 of them went over the fence. It was very impressive, so I'll give Dallas his due.
Thank you for that. I appreciate
that. I did see you kind of get low on that, too.
Oh, yeah. I had to. It was nice. It was a great day out there at the charity softball tournament. Made good friends with Jared Goff as well, quarterback of the Los Angeles Rams. Played a little second base. We actually turned a sexy double play. I don't know. Jared made a pretty good throw, Jay. Did you see that?
I did, and I also received the photo that you guys took for me, which was really, really charming. Thank you very much. made me feel loved.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. You guys had your middle fingers up. The Rays, this was a weird trade, especially because I was kind of,
because the Rays are giving away pitching?
Yeah, and just because like the parts, it was weird how it leaked, and you heard that Matt Liberatore was going, and you were like, oh, I wonder what the Cardinals are giving up. And then it was like, they're giving up Jose Martinez and like a Rosarena, right?
Yeah. And I mean, Arena, like he's like his tools, quote unquote. I mean, they're really excited about how fast he is. Yeah. I don't know how that translates in today's game, really, like unless you're running.
I mean, my sense of this deal, and you guys tell me if this is being unfair, is that because it was the Rays that were trading it, they were credited with being smart, active. Whereas if anybody else had traded like a top 50 pitching prospect for like Jose Martinez and like a guy whose bat might not profile in the outfield sufficiently to be an everyday player, they probably would have gotten skewered, right? Wouldn't you think a top 50 prospect would bring back more than this?
Yes. Yes, I do. actually, some of the...
Well, are we just completely dismissing Jose Martinez?
No,
though?
I'm not.
Well, you make that statement it kind of sounds like you are.
His role in this situation, to me, is very clear. He's now in a platoon or something like that with G-Man Choi at first base, and that fits snugly like a glove, baby. Because in his career, he has 298 plate appearances against lefties, and he's hit 331, 405, 570. Whereas G-Man Choi has a 584 career OPS against lefties and an 844 OPS against righties. So if you just kind of play the guy straight up on the strengths of their platoon, I mean, that is a high-end first base situation. like Jose Martinez's role here seems pretty clear. I just don't quite understand. You have to believe a lot in.
Well, maybe they just, and maybe they also you also have to consider always maybe they know something about the young lefty that others don't.
Yeah, this was honestly the first time that I saw the Rays make a trade where it wasn't like virtually universally praised. It's been a while. It's right. been a while
where,
since
where they have been like the clear.
No one was saying, winner. "Holy shit, what a fleece job!" No one was. It wasn't that drastic. It was kind of just like, yeah, I don't know if I like that. It was that type of reaction.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's also odd.
It's probably their first trade since Chaim Bloom left. And
wow. Yeah, Jared, do we want to talk about what that offseason looks like for Chaim Bloom? Jay, no. Have you thought about that?
We already
that?
Covered it. No, I think we covered it.
Yeah. Does he have a manager? I don't think they have. You don't have a.
Yeah. No, I think we covered it. Also, I don't know why this just came to mind. I think it was John Morosi had the Cardinals and Rockies exchanging names on a Nolan Arenado trade. Don't get too excited. Because the names that I heard that were exchanged, this thing ain't getting done. I mean, the Rockies will get laughed out of the building for the names that were requested. Future, these are just rumors. I don't know them to be true. Future starting nine guest, Mr. Flaherty.
Not happening.
That's not, and that's just one name. How about Dakota Hudson as well? You're gonna get laughed out of the building 10 times out of 10.
Oh, I'll tell you what, I'll go on. I'll say if the cost is Dakota Hudson and not much beyond that, I'm fucking signing up for that if I'm the Cardinals. Abso-fucking-lutely.
I'm with Jay Hay there.
And Jack Flaherty on top of
that? No. Jack Flaherty, Jack Flaherty is not available in a Nolan Arenado trade. Just like end of discussion. Yeah.
No,
right?
Jack ain't going fucking.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter who, like how it's constructed. Jack Flaherty's not involved in the deal. But if Dakota Hudson is the premium quote unquote player that they're demanding in a return for an Arenado deal. Depending on how the money works out exactly, but if that's the premium asset, I'm making that trade because I don't think Dakota Hudson is a frontline pitcher.
They want a BLT and they want prospects. Sure. They want BLT and prospects, big league talent. They need someone to plug in yesterday in their lineup. The minute they make that move and they need prospects,
Dakota Hudson, and Liberator, the guy they just got. Let's fucking go.
Maybe.
Let's fucking go.
Who's to say it couldn't still get done? You gotta aim high.
Are we okay with the fact that this is a year after? A year. Boys, Caribus, we were on the RV the day Nolan Arenado signed his extension. The day the news broke that he signed his deal. We were on the RV with that man.
I think it was a couple days after.
A couple days after.
Because when I caught him again in Colorado, I was like, two-time guest Nolan Arenado, my favorite player in the league. I'll say it every time we have him on. First question. You knew that you fucking signed that extension when you were on with us the first time, didn't you, you motherfucker? And he was like, no, we didn't know yet. But anyways, we were thinking of the Manny Machado news breaking when Trevor Bauer and Mike Clevenger were on the bus with us. By the way, Trevor Bauer,
see you Friday.
See you Friday, Trevor Bauer. He's probably got some takes. I would imagine he's got some takes on the whole Houston Astros.
If there is anybody, like, if I'm Trevor Bauer and I wake up today and open my phone and hit that Twitter box, turn on MLB Network, I might IG live that. And share with the world my excitement. Trevor Bauer has had a pretty good day today, I would have to believe. I would have to believe Trevor Bauer is sitting back going, Remember all you motherfuckers who told me I didn't know nothing? Remember every one of you who told me to shut my mouth and I didn't know shit and I was just worried and it's because I couldn't get outs and blah. Remember that? Remember when I told you it would come to light? Well, guess what? You ain't got a manager. You ain't even got a GM. And for all you other clowns that were talking that shit, why don't they have a manager? Why don't they have a GM? Because I told you so. That's why Trevor Bauer is the man of the hour.
What a fortuitous timing on that interview set up for Friday.
We usually that usually happens with us.
It's a good run.
Yeah, we've had a good run. The Tigers and Ivan Nova. The Tigers continued their run of signing marginal major leaguers, which is, I guess, a step in the right direction. Ivan Nova signs with the Tigers. Here's a nugget for you. Ivan Nova led the league with 34 starts last year. Did you know that it was the third fewest innings pitched in baseball history in a year where somebody made 34 or more starts?
He didn't have 200.
No, he did not. He had 184. Do you want to know the fewest innings pitched in a season with 34 plus starts?
100.
No. The person, like, oh, who was it?
Probably Drew Pomeranz.
It's not the correct answer, but you're envisioning to me the right type of pitcher.
A guy that averages like 4 1/3 innings per start.
Yeah, no, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
This is kind of fun. I wish I would have made 34 starts. It could have been.
So you guys have nailed the lefty part of it. Okay.
Okay.
So that part's in. So it's a lefty. It's kind of like a.
It was from four starts. So it's like he's durable.
2005.
Jason Vargas.
Nope.
Oh.
2005 NL Central. He also led the league in earned runs allowed that year, this individual. He allowed this was a tough season. He threw 186 and a third innings and made 34 starts, okay?
Dave Bush.
He allowed
Randy Wolf.
His ERA was 6.47. And he allowed 40 homers in 186 and a third innings.
Lefty.
He signed this
Zach
might
Day.
Have. No, was this his first year there? This was his first year after signing as a free agent. First year with the team, free agent. He plops down and he's like, how about 40 homers allowed and 134 earnies?
Ted Lilly.
good
guess.
You're so close.
I think he was with the Jays that year.
Ted Lilly is like this other. They're like, they have to be like pitching spirit animals. They may as well be the same person.
Oh my God. This is going to piss. Jared, quit looking at shit. What are you looking up? Quit looking up shit. I'm not looking up shit.
I'm not looking.
You fucking cheater. You fucking liar. Yes, you are.
I mean, I'm a Red Sox fan.
8-15, 6.47, and 34 starts. I'm going to give you the team now, okay? For the 2005 Cincinnati Reds, he signed with them as a free agent. Obviously, a homer-prone pitcher and a homer-prone ball. Listen. They had to have known what they were getting into because he allowed 43 homers the year before.
Oh my God! Why can I not say this?
I remember reading things being like this was just like the dawn of like public analytics. I feel like, and people were like, "Oh, you know, like he allowed 43 homers, and he's going to a homer-centric ballpark. This may not be an ideal fit."
I can't go through this many fucking teams' rotations.
And then he proceeded. He spent 3 years there. And in a total of 66 starts, contributed a 5.83 ERA and 73 homers allowed in 307 innings.
I mean, I was in fucking high A. And when was this? 05?
05 Reds. Some of his teammates include... that was a year where the pitching staff, in addition to this man, was Aaron Harang,
yeah,
Ramon Ortiz... Tag. Former prospect great Brandon Clausen, Luke Hudson. The offense featured legendary names like the mayor, Sean Casey, Rich Aurelia, Joe Randa, of course, Adam Dunn and Ken Griffey Jr., prospect great Austin Kearns. Willie Mopena was on the team at that point.
Rockin' Arroyo.
Edwin Encarnacion. Pre-breakout was still languishing. He was actually only 22 at the time.
What is it? Oh, Malton?
Hilton. What is it? I'm close.
You're so close. You couldn't be closer.
Oh.
Did you say Bolton and Hilton?
No, I said Hilton. Is it come on. Aaron Hilton. No, fuck no. It's not Aaron. It's Eric. It's Eric. Eric Hilton. Milton.
Yes. Yes. He did. I got it.
Eric Milton. Wow. What a journey that was.
Wow. Eric Milton. I could literally see Dallas's brain just melting inside of his cranium.
Aaron Hilton. That's great stuff. Wow, that took.
I think I know that because I think he was a dude who, I'm not sure. Did he have, if he had a shoulder surgery, or I think I might.
I'm sure he did. He was terrible.
it's a precursor.
No, you're right. I think he did Dallas because he missed the entire 2008 season.
And see, and the reason I know that is because I believe, I'm not sure if he was teammates with CJ Nikowski or he knew CJ Nikowski, but that name came up when I was talking to CJ Nikowski about getting stem cell research or stem cell therapy and yada, yada, yada. Wow. I'm literally mentally drained right now.
Yeah, that was taxing on everybody. So taxing that I'm just going to say that the Dodgers signed Alex Wood and that the Rangers signed Todd Frazier, and we're just going to kind of move right along. Twitter questions. You guys ready?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need a cigarette.
Need some chatter about the Cardinals' interest in Nolan Arenado. I'm going to rephrase this question since we sort of chatted about it. What do you think of the card? Let's say he goes there. What is your reaction? Nolan Arenado is a St. Louis card. Does that excite you? Does that bore you? Is that a boring destination? Is it an exciting one? Like, what does that do for you?
I think that's a marquee destination for a marquee player. I think the St. Louis Cardinals have shown a track record for not only attracting, but landing and thriving with marquee talent. Right? Is that fair to say? Matt Holliday? Mark McGwire before him? I mean, like, and I'm sure there's been other big name guys. But why would you not be interested in a cornerstone type player? And if you're Nolan Arenado and you take the, I mean, it's not like he's going to have the opportunity to go and take a visit and see how things are going in St. Louis, but he's probably going to be able to do some homework on this organization. And why would that not be a place, especially if we're circling back to the very idea that Nolan Arenado is entertaining the idea of being moved while holding all of the cards, folks. He has a full no trade clause, and a year after signing an extension is now entertaining the idea of leaving the place that has made him a very, very, very wealthy man. So for reasons we're probably not privy to, Nolan Arenado, again, a year after signing that deal, is thinking about vacating. So
I think there's probably a theory as to why he would be open to it. He's got that opt-out. And I think he's very much on pace to perform at a level where he could opt out, make more money that maybe the Rockies wouldn't want to spend on him. So why wait around? I mean, the Rockies, why not jump at the opportunity to win right now? Why not jump at the opportunity to be with an organization that wants to put you in a position to win a World Series right now? Why delay the inevitable?
I'm with you.
Why aren't you guys giving the White Sox the respect they deserve? I don't quite understand this. We said they were serious competitors for the AL Central and would be considered a wild card threat if the season started today, right? That was the general consensus.
Yeah, and I even went as far as to say obviously before the Twins have kind of made some noise here recently, that there's no reason to think that they couldn't be near the top of the list in terms of contenders for that division. Now, Jay, hey, you kind of shat on that idea. I get it. I understand. You still need to see them go out and play. But considering what they've done on the pitching staff front, the Chicago White Sox, as well as bringing in Grandal and the rest of the gang, you're pretty fucking confident in your club right now. And I hope you sent that tweet out wearing a Lucas G Elite T-shirt because we're pumping out White Sox merch, and you had the audacity to say that.
That's true.
To me, like, this question implies that this person has to some degree lost sight of the fact that the White Sox finished 29 games behind the Twins last year and 21 behind the Indians. 29 yeah. and 21 games. Like, Yasmani Grandal is a great player. Yasmani Grandal moves you forward by like 2.5 or 3 wins. Yeah. Like, this is not like this is none of these players are Barry Bonds, and this isn't the NBA. Like, the White Sox needed to make massive improvements to their roster to get on the level. Look, forget the Indians for a second. On the because that can be we can debate about how good the Indians actually are right now. There's really no debating how good the Twins are. So the White Sox needed to make massive improvements to their roster to get on even near where the Twins were, even if you build in 10 games of regression into the Twins' win-loss, which is aggressive, of course. But like, and maybe they have made a lot of those moves, but this idea that they deserve to be like they are the AL Central favorites or whatever this person is looking for is seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, you can't. It's tough to finish a month out of first place and think you're just going to be the guy the next year based on what's happened here. That's why Jay Hay shit on my idea about you guys, your White Sox, you and your White Sox players, your White Sox fans, the Pale Hosers, being a contender. Yo, but I'm with you. Be a contender. You're probably not the lead horse, though.
Here's a fucking fact. Here is a fucking fact, okay? Yep. The White Sox finished closer to the Royals than they did to the Indians. And the White Sox finished closer to the Tigers, who won 47 games, than they did to the Twins. Okay? I hope that's sufficient perspective. They've got a long way to go. Maybe they've covered a decent chunk of it, but
that's not even a little brother scenario. That's like stepbrother scenario.
Jesus. Who's winning the AL West?
Oh, you go ahead and book it, baby. I'm already got my champagne goggles.
I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like for 2020, losing a manager and a GM doesn't set the Astros back so much. It does for down the line.
I mean, they did lose Gerrit Cole, too, to be fair.
They did lose Gerrit Cole, which is a big blow, but you also have the Cy Young Award winner in his place.
Zach Greinke's not too bad either.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I mean, I think we saw. I think we saw what he is against the American League competition in 2019. But Dallas, what would you put the odds at? Not just the A's. Let's just say any team dethroning the Astros in 2020 for the division crown.
It's still an uphill battle. It's still an uphill battle. I'll say that much. I will say this much, though. I believe this division to be decided within 5 games.
Yeah, I agree. I'm tempted to.
Go ahead, Jay. Speak.
I feel more of a pull towards the Athletics in terms of they can and will win this division than I really anticipated feeling by mid-January.
Look, the Rangers have made some noise too. All right, I'm
not enough though. Right, let's get real.
What's that, Caribus?
I said Klubot.
Yeah, Klubot. I mean, I just look.
Could be prime for a good old bounce back season.
No doubt. The one thing that the A's have to consider is that some of the arms that are rolling in there into that rotation now are untested to an extent, and you're going to have a bounce back from Manaea of a full year of coming off that arm surgery, and you're also going to have Puck and Lizardo getting their feet wet, hopefully, for a full season. So there's a lot of question marks still surrounding what does look to be a whole heap of upside in Oaktown.
Can I get Dallas Braden's thoughts on the big news that went down today?
You know,
I would love to hear what he has to say on the Tony Kemp trade.
Depth, baby. Oh, give it up. Give it up. Give it to me. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on at second base right now. Probably going to be a little Franklin Barreto. Probably going to be a little Tony Kemp, it looks like. Jorge Mateo is just kicking around in AAA, balling out, waiting for the phone call. So we got to see how that unfolds. But yeah, look, really, if we're being honest, it's depth in the outfield, right? Corner spots. We know that in Oakland, we appreciate depth. We appreciate versatility at the utility position. So that's what Kemp provides. He can fill a hole at second base. He can go play some outfield as well. Sometimes the guys are going to need a spell. That's what Tony Kemp represents. Speed from the left side.
Is there any interest in doing an all-decade draft for the 20s now? Basically, you'd be projecting what you think the best team of the next 10 years will be. You know what? This person who submitted this and I think very much alike. I had already thought about doing this idea because I think it would be a great opportunity. Here's the best part about if we did this draft. It would be, by definition, the most subjective of any draft that we've done yet because there is no war to accumulate about 2020 through 2029. So I do think that would be a lot of fun. I think it would be allow us to shine a light on some of the game's up-and-coming young stars. Like, I think it would be fun. So, like, where do you draft Fernando Tatis, right? Like, who is Mike Trout going number one overall, or is Ronald Acuna going number one overall because he's 6 years younger or whatever it might be?
That so, draft would be fucking chaos.
Oh, it would be. And there's there's seriously, you could try to punch a hole in an argument, but there's really no. There's no need to do that. You're wasting your time. You just have to build a case. That's all you're doing is building a case, building a case. I mean,
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think I may or may not question some of the decision-making of that individual who submitted that question. They've made an iffy decision recently in their life that they're going to have to live with probably forever. But I do like that idea. I do appreciate that idea.
What are you talking about?
Who came up with that draft idea, Jay?
Oh, well, wait, are you referencing my wife?
Are you referencing my wife? Are you telling me that my wife made a bad decision? Well, she said she'd marry me?
She did come up with that, but that was also submitted by a loyal listener as well.
I don't believe that goes at all.
Well, it's right there in the responses to the tweet that asked for our questions.
All right. If you sent that tweet out, tweet me so I can have that proved to me.
Hold on. Okay. Well, while I read you the next question, I'll just go find the tweet myself. Anyway, yeah, we'll probably do that. Look for that. We'll give it a little bit of space, but look for that sometime around spring training, I would guess. This stems from the Montreal-Tampa Bay fiasco. During that pod, Dallas mentioned to, quote, get baseball the hell out of Florida. So I put together some hypothetical divisions. Curious what the podcast thinks, okay? So this guy has the AL East with the Yanks, the Sox, the O's, the Jays, and the Phillies. Okay, so the Rays are no longer there.
I like that.
Obviously, since this is a no-Florida situation. The AL Central has the Indians, Royals, White Sox, Twins, and Astros. Okay.
Yeah, get him out of the West. Totally okay with that.
So we've taken the Tigers out of the AL Central. The AL West is the Rangers, the Mariners, the A's, the Angels, and a hypothetical Portland team.
I'm into it.
The NL East is the Nats, the Braves, the Mets, the Expos, or the Montreal team, and the Tigers, and then the NL West and NL Central stay the same. I guess my only objection to this on its face is the Tigers seem like they haven't been properly taken care of in this. I don't quite see them as an NL East team.
Why? Detroit? Like, they're over there? Yeah.
No.
This is more regionally based, I have to feel.
Of course.
Yeah.
So in what way does that work with a Washington, D.C. team, an Atlanta team, a New York team, Montreal? Montreal's the only one that's close.
Yeah, well, I mean, so somebody has to be the farthest west team, the most western team.
Yeah.
That would be Detroit.
I mean, that. What
it's
if.
Not a crime.
Ooh. No, that. It'd be kind of cool to have the Jays and the Toronto and the Montreal team in the same division.
There'd have some, to do that.
That would right? be that would be lunacy. There would be
if they played each other 19 times a year. Like think of just the chaos. Like it would be a postseason environment.
Oh fuck yeah!
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, the country would sell out a poutine.
Shout out poutine.
Yeah, I think we've got we got something here. Yeah, I mean,
I like
I
it.
Would love for yeah. I think it'd be badass to have the Yankees. Like, I'd love to have the Phillies in that AL East corridor. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, well, switch especially because yeah, I mean, between the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Phillies, those talk about some beautiful fan bases. My God, by the end of the season, there's going to be like 15,000 people at those games because the other half of them are going to be in jail or or doing community service. And I mean, for Christ's sake, the children of Philadelphia during Christmas time, don't buy them anything that's going to require batteries. Those little some bitches are going to have zero fun. They're going to be out of batteries. Philly will sell out of batteries if they go to the AL East.
Final thoughts. I have some final thoughts. Thank you very much to every member of the grounds crew. Who voted for me. I really appreciate it. Whether it was a makeup vote for last time or a genuine vote for this time, I don't actually really care. It was nice to get the championship that I deserved. And also look forward to the Trevor Bauer interview, which will presumably be episode number 153.
Oh, yeah. That's it. And we also stay tuned, as Jared alluded to. He and I were out at the California Strong Charity Softball Tournament this weekend in Malibu, California, out at Pepperdine, supporting California wildfire first responders and families that were affected by the ridiculous fires that have been going on out here in Northern and Southern California. So stay tuned for some of those videos and content. It's going to be awesome. And also, folks, spring training is right around the corner. Pitchers and catchers in about 30 or so days. That means the Spikes Up Tour is getting ready to get it cranking.
I won't, no spoilers, obviously. I want people to watch the video of the celebrity softball game. I got to look at my at bat today, and next week when we release the podcast, that'll be after the video gets released. I've got some takes about the at bat that also are reflections about myself that I need to talk about.
Whoa, that's going to be intense.
Mm-hmm. So don't miss the video. Don't miss the video.
That is, I'm looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Until then.
Until then.